Again, as I said, this propulsion mechanism is going to determine the type of flow profile they generate. So for pullers, you typically get flow this direction. For pullers, it's the opposite. And this is going to have important implications regarding the physical properties of these suspensions. So we want to be able to describe how the propulsion mechanism, how the flow generated by the swimmers affects these physical properties. And maybe the most well-known example is the anomalous viscosity that you have in swimming suspensions. So here we have the work by Rafai and Sokolov regarding the increase or decrease in the viscosity. So on the right, you have the effective viscosity for a suspension of swimming cells. And in this case, it's Bacillus subtilis, which is a pusher. And the interesting thing here is they compared the results when the bacteria are dead and when they're alive and swimming. And you see a very clear increase in the viscosity. So for dead cells, you recover essentially what are the what you would get for inert colloids. But you don't just have an increase in the viscosity. If you change the type of swimmer, so you go from pusher to puller, and you can have some completely opposite behavior. So here, we initially observe a decrease in the viscosity, and then you have a non-monotonic behavior, and it increases.
I'm sorry, that's just a big question. I thought that in the paper by Rafai and Jimutin Pella, they were studying the Clavinomonas, so maybe you have exchanged the Bacillus and Clavinomonas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. You're right. Yeah. Sorry, yes. Yeah.
But the references are on the correct figure.
Sorry, yeah.
Okay. I think you just exchanged your
I think, yeah, I have the, I had the
no,
pictures
no, I think
in
birth. Because the correct references, but just the best citizen in terms of
the
last
yeah.
The legends are inverted. Yeah. Sorry. And then finally, so maybe more related to what the work we're doing right now is to look at the diffusion in swimming suspensions. So here you have some experimental results for diffusion of Chlamydomonas reinhardti along with passive microspheres. So first thing you notice is there's a very large difference in length scales with when you look at the trajectories of the swimmers and the inert passive particles. So the swimmers typically will have very long trajectories, some small-scale fluctuations, and then you have a collision between swimmers. They change directions, and then they swim away. When you look at the tracer beads, so they have no inherent motion. They're just subject to the stirring of the fluid due to the swimmers. So to properly characterize this, you have to take into account the hydrodynamic interaction, so how the swimmers are affecting the flow. And this is what we've tried to do. To do this, so the problem, I guess, goes way back if you consider the colloidal dynamics problem. So for the moment, let's neglect the fact that the particles are swimming, but if you want to include the effects of hydrodynamics, so the first solution was proposed, I guess, back in the 70s by Ermak and McCammon. So in that case, in their Brownian dynamic simulation method, they only include the far-field hydrodynamic effects. So as you, if you increase the concentration and the particles start coming closer together, this method will break down. In particular, you don't include the lubrication effects when particles are trying to squeeze the fluid or are shearing the fluid. So obviously the next step was to include these lubrication effects, and this was done by Brady and Bosses. They developed the Stokesian dynamics method. So here again you have long-range hydrodynamics and you add the short-range lubrication effects. And later on I'll reference the work done by Ishikawa on swimmer suspensions, and they use this Stokesian dynamics method. And maybe it's the ideal method for studying dynamics of colloids or swimmers, if you have Newtonian host fluid in the Stokes limit. If you want to go beyond the Stokes limit, or if you want to consider complex host fluids, then you need to actually try to solve directly the Navier-Stokes equation. And so that's what we've tried to do. So there are many different flavors available, I guess, for how you solve this. So you have a finite element method, Lattice-Boltzmann, multi-particle collision dynamics, fluid particle dynamics, and the colors don't seem to be showing up. The method we use, which is the smooth profile method. Now, in these type of simulations, the main problem is how to deal with the boundary between the colloids and the fluid. Now, if you would have non-moving boundaries, you could solve the Navier-Stokes equation on a grid, and you just generate a body-fitted mesh. So you have very detailed information at the surface of the particle, but the moment you allow the particles to move, it's impossible to regenerate the mesh at each step of the simulation. So the solution proposed in the smooth profile method is to allow for the fact that you're not going to resolve exactly what happens at the fluid solid interface, so you introduce a diffuse interface. So basically you have a region inside the particles which is solid. Here outside you consider it's completely fluid, but at the interface you add an interface of finite width which is both fluid and solid. Now the benefit of doing this is that you can then use a fixed grid to solve the Navier-Stokes equation. You don't have to worry about recalculating the grid at every step. Since the interface has a finite width, you'll always get some points at the interface. So the basic idea behind the method, again, is to introduce some phase field that will allow you to define all your field variables over the entire computational domain. So you have smooth profile function phi. Again, like I said, inside the particle domain, it's 1. Outside, it's 0. And in between, it smoothly interpolates between fluid and particle. So using this smooth profile function, you can define, for example, the particle velocity field over the entire computational domain. It's just given by the rigid body constraints on the velocities. So you have, in the end, a total velocity field, which includes both the fluid velocity, the host fluid velocity, and this particle velocity field. So
you have one of these for each part. And then you already have some dynamics of the particle.
Yes, you have one of these for each particle, and then you can define a particle density field, which is just a superposition of each.
So that's actually what I was wondering. So do you solve for the dynamics of each particle and for the u for the velocity of the fluid, or do you actually define a continuum field for the particles as well?
You define a continuum field for the particles. That was the next slide. So what you actually solve for is this modified Navier-Stokes equation. So here it's not just the host fluid velocity, but the total velocity.
Yeah.
It includes the particles and the fluid. And so the extra term here is this body force, which is going to couple the dynamics of the fluid with the dynamics of the particle.
So for the particles, you have an equation of motion for the
particles. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
so this is what couples both of them. So you assume momentum conservation, and this is just going to make sure that inside the regions of the corresponding to the particle domain, you always maintain the rigid body constraint. So they will move as particles. Briefly how you solve this in practice. So to start, you neglect this extra term to enforce the rigid body constraint, and you just update the fluid velocity by considering the advection and the viscous stress terms. You update the particle positions, orientations, and then you can look inside the particle domain and ask yourself, what was the momentum exchange inside this particle domain? So you have the updated velocity for the fluid and the particle field, and this change in momentum will give you the hydrodynamic force that the fluid is going to exert on the particles. So with this information and any other external field you want to add, or the interactions between the particles themselves, you can update the particle velocities. And then all you have to do is ensure that within the particle domain, the rigid body constraints are satisfied. And finally, you impose the, so here we've just considered incompressible fluids, and you impose the incompressibility condition on the whole, on the total fluid velocity. And this ensures that you have the impenetrability condition. So there's no fluid leaking into the particles and no particle leaking out into the fluid. Okay, so that was basically just the vanilla version of the model for colloid dynamics.
What about particles meeting each other?
Sorry?
What about particles meeting each other?
We add a very short range repulsive interaction between colloids to prevent that. So now just the swimmer model we use is the Lighthill and Blake squirmers, which attempt to model the ciliary propulsion of these type of organisms. So first you're going to assume that it's spherical. You have at the surface an envelope of cilia which are beating synchronously, and this is giving rise to the propulsion. Instead of trying to resolve exactly what's happening at this surface, what you're going to do is replace the cilia by considering an effective slip velocity at the surface of the particles. So if you consider that this is now your swimmer, you have a fixed coordinate axis attached to each swimmer, and it has a preferred swimming direction, which I call here E3. So the slip velocity at the surface of the particle is going to depend exclusively on this polar angle theta. And the expression for the slip velocity is just this infinite expansion here in terms of Legendre polynomials. So it only depends on the angle, on the polar angle theta, and the only free parameters in the model are these BN coefficients, which give you the weight of each of the modes. So typically, of course, you can't include this infinite expansion. Typically, you stop at second order, so you have this expression for the slip velocity. Now, the first coefficient will determine the swimming speed. And the swimming speed would be just 2/3 of B1. The second coefficient, in particular, the sign of the second coefficient is going to determine whether you have a pusher or a puller. If alpha is negative, you have a pusher. If alpha is positive, you have a puller. And also the value of this second coefficient, B2, is going to give you the stress load that the swimmer exerts on the fluid. So in the end, we have a very simple model in terms of spherical particles with a specific slip velocity at their surface, which are trying to mimic the case of these type of more realistic swimmers. So you neglect the fine structure of the body, but you're able to reproduce approximately the flow field they generate in the fluid. And with regards to the computational model we use, the smooth profile method, this can all be accomplished just by introducing an extra body force, which is going to maintain not just the rigid body constraint within the particle domain, but also this slip velocity. So just a quick result showing the validity of the method. So here, figure A, you have the normalized velocity for a puller at different values of alpha. You see that we're within a couple percent of the theoretical value of 1. The analytical result is strictly valid for Reynolds number 0. Here we're at very low Reynolds number. One thing you see is that as you increase the value of alpha, you have some fluctuations in the velocity, and this is due to the resolution of the grid. I fixed the particle size, but as alpha becomes larger, you have very large fluid velocity at the surface of the particle. If you want to resolve this, you would need a finer mesh. And then here, figures B and C, you have the streamlines for puller in the lab frame and the frame moving with the particle. I don't know if you can, not very clear, but you should have two sets of curves, color-coded curve, which represent the analytical results, and some grayscale curve, which show the results obtained from our simulation. So you see very good agreement between the two. Although if you go to larger and larger distances, you will see some strong disagreement, but this is due to the difference in the boundary conditions. In the simulations, we always have periodic boundary conditions. The analytical results, of course, assume you have a single particle in an unbounded system. Again, this is just to compare the different type of streamlines you get for different values of alpha, so different strength of the swimmer. So here you have puller, pusher, and the potential swimmer. So one thing you can see is that for small values of alpha, in particular for alpha 0, the disturbance to the fluid is very small and very localized. As you increase the value of alpha, this disturbance has longer and longer range. So also here maybe you can imagine that if you have two swimmers that are coming together, it's going the type of alignment they can achieve, or the collision dynamics, I guess, is going to depend strongly on whether it's a pusher or a puller.
Can I ask a question? So this alpha equal to 0 streamlines seems like it's a particle subject to body force, because a monopole term in the principle of singularity, usually they're force free, so I don't understand this picture. So if you look at the streamlines, it's like would you, if I could trace particle by body force, so the principle of singularity of the storm is a monopole.
Yeah, but the in this case, the streamlines, they decay much faster.
No, but you should have a different topology of thin lines, that dipole and such circulation around it. Because your swimmer...
I don't know, but sorry, this is for the... these are the streamlines in the reference frame of the moving body.
The other streamlines were in the slide before.
In the other streamlines... in the other streamlines for alpha equals 0, you do get this dipole term. So then we started doing simulations for suspensions of these swimmers to look at how they are diffusing. So this is an example of the type of motion you observe. So these are simulations at different values of packing fraction. So I think this is 2%, 5%, 10%, 12%, and you have randomly chosen three particles and colored them so you can see the trajectories. But this is for, again, the case alpha equals 0, and what you see is essentially they're always moving in straight line unless they come very close to another swimmer, then they reorient and again start to swim away. mostly it's, I guess, ballistic motion. Now, if you consider alpha equals minus 2 in this case, you'll see much more interesting behavior in the particle trajectories, because the swimmers are stirring the fluid more strongly. You see, even at moderate concentrations, you no longer have the ballistic motion that we saw before. Now, if you wait long enough and you look, for example, at the mean square displacement of these swimmers, you will get a plateau, even in the absence of thermal fluctuations. So here in all our simulations, we neglect thermal fluctuations, and the diffusive motion in the swimmers and later the inner tracer particles is just due to the stirring of the fluid. So just a brief review of the experiments that have been performed on these type of systems. All of them on the diffusion of inner tracers in swimming suspensions, and they all find that the diffusion coefficient scales linearly as the volume fraction of swimmers. Some studies also report this characteristic diffusion time. It's the time at which the motion of the tracers goes from ballistic to diffusive, and they also report a linear dependence in concentration. So here what you can see is you have experiments for both pusher and pullers with tracer particles that can go roughly 2-3 orders of magnitude smaller than the swimmers to particles that are roughly twice the swimmer size. And you always observe this linear increase in concentration. Recently also realized it's not just linear in concentration, it should be linear in the flux of swimmers. But to first order, this average swimming velocity can be considered constant. So the theoretical studies that have been done on this tracer diffusion have succeeded in explaining this linear dependence in concentration. So for this, so you can look at the work of FIFO and Yeomans. They use the point force solution to the steady state Stokes equation, and they started by considering force dipole moving from minus infinity to plus infinity, and considering the displacement of a massless fluid particle. And if you have a force dipole moving from minus infinity to plus infinity, what you observe are closed orbits in the tracer trajectory. So here's just a very schematic diagram of why you get these closed orbits. So depending on whether it's pusher or puller, if it's at the front of the particle, initially it'll be pushed. As soon as the particle swims past, it's going to be pushed, but in the other direction. And when you actually solve it, you get the closed orbits. One way to break, so in that case, you would have no diffusion for the tracers. A way to break these closed loops and to get tracer diffusion is to remove the restriction of having the swimmer go from minus infinity to plus infinity. If instead you consider a swimmer that undergoes some run and tumble motion, so it's going to swim for a fixed distance, then it randomly reorients, then you get diffusive motion for the fluid particles, which scales linearly as concentration.
And yes. Can you say again about this relation? D is proportional to swimming velocity times phi. Is this a phenomenological relation, or did people really derive it?
They derived it. I think if you look at this recent work by Pushkin and Nomans,
you find the relation for U times.
and also the latest experiments by Jepson and Martinez also show that it should be the flux and not just the concentration. Now, brief, I guess, recap of some other simulation studies that have been done for this particular system. So Ishikawa, Loxi, Pedley, they did Stokesian dynamic simulations of squirmers with inert tracer particles, and they considered both tracers that are spherical particles with the same size as the swimmers, as the squirmers, and also massless fluid particles. Here you have the diffusion coefficient as a function of concentration. The circles at the top show the decrease in the diffusion coefficient for the swimmers, and here on the bottom you have the diffusion coefficient of inert spherical tracer particles and the diffusion coefficient of fluid particles. The first thing you notice is you have completely opposite behavior. For the tracers, you see an increase as a function of concentration, as was seen experimentally. But for the swimmers, you have a decrease, which goes as phi to the minus 1. Sorry, these are inverted. It should be d tracer, this should be d swimmer. So for the swimmers, they observe a diffusion coefficient, which goes as phi to the minus 1. The reason you get this sort of opposing behaviors is because in the case of the swimmers, so if you look at the... D tracer proportional to phi, this one is correct, but yeah. This one should be swimmer, phi to the minus 1. This is this squirmer. Problem here is for the swimmers, you're mostly looking at the swimming motion. So if you define a diffusion coefficient in terms of the mean square displacement, there's going to be a very large contribution coming from the inherent swimming of the particles. The fluctuations caused by the stirring of the fluid are going to be completely masked by this. So that's why you get a decrease in the diffusion coefficient. So kind of looking at two different things here. So
what's this depend on tracer particle size?
Yes.
I think, I mean, if I make the tracer particle as large as the swimmer, then I should be back to the other issue.
These are these results here.
Yeah, but does it depend on size of the tracer particle?
Yes. But here, these tracer particles are the same size as the swimmer.
They are the same size as the swimmer?
Yes, same size as the swimmer. So yes, here you have the diffusion of massless fluid particles. Mm-hmm. Here you have the diffusion of inert tracer particles that have the same size as the squirmers.
What about the dependence? So before you said that here the tracers also go like here, right? Not in this
relation,
so you said in experiments?
Here they just reported, like they just fitted it to...
So they don't look
at they didn't look carefully at the dependence on the swimming speed.
But presumably it should also scale linear in your...
Yes. Yeah. But so when you look at the average swimming velocity, to first order, it's constant. You can kind of neglect the dependence on concentration, at least up to these values.
And this is in the regime of passive, the diffusion of the swimmers is in the regime of concentration. I can't quite see that.
Oh, sorry. This is up to 10%?
What happens at very low concentration?
Very low concentration?
Yeah.
Sorry, what do you...
But the thing blows up, so the pattern can be very, very good.
Here for the. Oh, you don't observe diffusion motion. Or you would have to wait very long time to see diffusion in the swimmers.
And that's because the model has. That's because there's no noise at all.
Yes, there's no thermal fluctuation.
No rotation.
No. So everything is just due to the stirring of the fluid from the other swimmers. So what we try to do to better understand the role played by this stirring of the fluid is to consider the motion of the swimmers, not in the lab frame, but in the reference frame of the swimmers themselves. So as I said, in this squirmer model, you have a preferential swimming direction. And if you have an isolated swimmer, it's going to swim in this direction indefinitely. As you put more swimmers together, they're going to stir the fluid. And now the displacement of the particle is not going to be just along this axis, but it's going to acquire, you'll have basically fluctuations in the velocity perpendicular to the swimming direction, perpendicular to the swimming direction, and also parallel to the swimming direction. So what we did was analyze the displacements in the displacements of the swimmers with respect to this swimming axis. So we can decompose the motion between two time intervals as motion parallel to the swimming axis and perpendicular to the swimming axis. In this way, you can remove the effect due to the inherent swimming motion of the particle. So if you do this, then you can define an effective diffusion coefficient within this reference frame of the swimming bodies, where the average effect due to the swimming motion is removed. So you have only the fluctuations in the motion due to the stirring of the fluid. And you can do the same thing for the velocity fluctuations. So next, what all the results I'll show will be in reduced units, where a unit of length is the radius and unit of time is the time required for a swimmer to swim a distance equal to its radius. So this is what you get for the, this is just the standard diffusion coefficient, which I showed before the results of Ishikawa. As you increase the concentration, the diffusion coefficient decreases, and the decrease goes as phi to the minus one. Now if you look at this effective diffusion coefficient, where the swimming motion of the particles is removed, you look only at the fluctuations due to the stirring of the fluid, then you get, I guess, what you would expect intuitively, that the more swimmers you have, the more the fluid is stirred. So you have an increase in the diffusion coefficient of the swimmers. And this increase also scales proportionally to the volume fraction of swimmers, as was seen experimentally. And again, it's analogous, or you get the same behavior if you look at the translational diffusion coefficient or the rotational diffusion coefficient.
There's no thermal noise at all.
No thermal noise. It's just due to the hydrodynamics.
Question.
Yes.
So if you, is this the result at small Planck fraction? If you increase the Planck fraction to a large value, will the diffusivity of the tracer still increase with concentration of swimmers, a large Planck fraction?
So here, I've just gone up to 12%. Last simulations I did were up to 20%, and in that case, you see an increase. It's still increasing. If you go higher, I'm not sure. And so here I have the results for the velocity correlation function, the single particle velocity correlation function. So the black curve is, I guess, the standard definition of the velocity correlation function. But again, if you decompose the motion as motion parallel or perpendicular to the swimming axis, you can clearly see the difference between the particle-particle interactions and fluid-particle interactions. So this yellow curve here shows the decrease in, or shows the velocity correlation but for velocity components parallel to the swimming direction. So this decreasing correlation is due just to reorientation of the particle swimming. And here, this curve shows the velocity correlations, but for this second curve shows the velocity correlation, but for fluctuations perpendicular to the swimming direction. So here you can distinguish between two vastly different timescales. One, like I said, due to the fluid particle collisions. The other one is due to particle-particle collisions. So here you have the scaling of the this effective diffusion coefficient. Like I said, you have roughly linear increase. It increases linearly with concentration for both the translational diffusion coefficient as the rotational diffusion coefficient. And you see also the effect of varying alpha. So varying the strength at which it's stirring the fluid. So if you increase the value of alpha, you get more diffusion. Here also I've plotted the scaling of this characteristic diffusion time, the time scale at which So here I have the two time scales I showed previously from the velocity correlation function. So we have one short time scale, which is given by the fluid particle collisions, and another long scale time scale, which is given by particle-particle collisions. This long time scale decreases as phi to the minus one. But this is essentially what you get if you look at the diffusion coefficient, or the standard diffusion coefficient. You have this decrease as phi to the minus one in the diffusion coefficient. But it's mainly looking at particle collisions. So now what we tried to do was add tracers into the system and see how they were behaving. So what was their diffusion and how it compares with the diffusion of the tracers. So here I have the velocity correlation functions for the swimmers. Those are the dashed lines. Again, this is correlation functions of the velocity fluctuations perpendicular to the swimming direction. And the solid lines are the velocity correlation functions for the tracers. And it's color-coded. Lighter color corresponds to increased concentration. And what you see that is not apparent in the velocity correlation function of the swimmers is the appearance of this anti-correlation peak, which decreases as you increase the concentration. If you go up to 20% volume fraction, you see that there's very little difference between the velocity fluctuations of the swimmers or the tracers. And this anti-correlation peak is related to this sort of mechanism that gave rise to the closed orbits in the tracer trajectory. So as a swimmer swims past an inert colloid, the force it feels has a very clear asymmetry. So in one case, it's being pushed up, then the swimmer goes past, and then it's being pushed down. So this gives rise to the anti-correlation peak and the velocity correlation function. What's interesting, maybe, is that you don't observe the same thing for the swimmers. And finally here, I have the mean square displacement divided by time for both swimmers and tracers. Again, the dashed lines correspond to the swimmers, the solid lines correspond to the tracers. And you see, well, first for alpha equals plus one, you're not really able to define, there's no plateau in the mean square displacement, so you're not able to define the diffusion coefficient. For all the other values of alpha, the stirring is strong enough to give rise to diffusive behavior, and that very low volume fractions, you see that there's a clear reduction in the diffusion coefficient of the tracers with respect to the diffusion of the swimmers, and this is due to this, again, this asymmetric push-pull behavior that gives rise to that anti-correlation peak in the velocity correlation function. But again, as you increase the concentration, you have more and more swimmers stirring the fluid, and this effect is screened out. So you see that you recover very good agreement between the diffusion coefficient of the swimmers and of the tracer particles.
Excuse me, yes. Can you shortly explain how you define the time-dependent diffusion coefficient?
It's just
maybe you said it.
Mean square displacement divided by time. I have
so you just say mean square displacement and then just divide by time. That's how you define a time-dependent
diffusion. For the tracer particles, yes. For the swimmers, it's mean square displacement, but we look at displacements with respect to the coordinate frame of the swimmer.
Shouldn't it be a more local definition?
Yes, exactly.
And use the whole time from the beginning of the measurement.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we take a derivative somehow in regard to time? If you say you divide by time, you divide the mean square displacement by time. You mean the time from the very beginning, the zero. Your plot, I mean, your plot, you have an initial increase and then you have a plateau.
This is the.
Yeah, but if you look at your plot, you have an increase and then plateaus typically. Then you divide it by the time to zero.
No, not the time to zero. So you vary.
Means the delta t here. Okay.
The zero is varied.
Means the delta t here. Velocity
linear in time.
If it's not linear in time, then it's a. You measure. I mean, you disregard the curvature.
It's linear in time for very short times.
Yeah.
But then you have a plateau.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I think you should take a local definition.
I mean, he uses some sort of a delta t here. I'm not sure that somehow implies some locality at least. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, you can put that.
Yeah.
Finally, this is the scaling of the diffusion coefficient with the flux of with the swimmer flux, or the average swimming speed times concentration of swimmers. The open symbols are the results for the swimmers, and the filled symbols are the results for the tracer particles. So, at low concentrations, you have a reduced diffusion coefficient for the tracers with respect to swimmers. As the concentration is increased, the two are essentially the same. This was basically what I wanted to say. So we have a simulation method that allows us to study swimming suspensions by including the full many-body hydrodynamic effects. And we saw that you have two very distinct mechanisms, particle-particle interactions and particle fluid interactions, which give rise to two very distinct and separated regimes in the dynamics of the system. And also, when you look at the fluid-particle interactions, it's very similar for both swimmers and tracers if you're at high enough concentrations. But at low swimming concentration, you do start to see a difference because the swimmers and the tracers will react differently to the noise that's stirring the imposed flow. And understanding how the system, how the particles react to this stirring will hopefully allow us to develop this more accurate coarse grain models of swimming suspensions. So thank you, and thank the JSPS for funding.
How your the value of your effective diffusion translation, how it can be compared to the thermal diffusion coefficient, which I would like to compare per tracer, for example. Is it 10 times, 100 times bigger, the same?
I'm not sure.
So you plot the diffusion coefficient in which units? If you would scale to a real number, to a, let's say, I don't know.
This is all in simulation units.
Yeah, you must do it because otherwise you don't know how important it is. I mean, the experiments must be that the active stuff dominates, otherwise the experiments wouldn't make sense.
The experiments I've seen at least say that the effects due to the swimming dominate the thermal fluctuations.
Must be otherwise.
Yeah, but
what were the numbers in the experiments? You had to
be. You have to be careful.
Must be. There's no certain numbers. Yeah, that's like the better. I thought we had it.
Say stop.
Is it that one? No.
This is also
simulation. Okay.
I have to reference this here.
Your method is called the smooth profile method?
Yes.
Is it the same as smooth particle hydrodynamics?
No.
Can you say a little bit about the difference to the other methods you mentioned? I mean, computational cost, is your method fast, slow? Can you penalize it? I mean, what is the benefit regarding it?
I think it's very similar to Lattice-Boltzmann or MPC.
But I think there's a big difference between MPC and Lattice-Boltzmann.
So at least with this method, the largest simulation you can scale to 1,000, 10,000 particles.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, you did everything for spherical particles.
Yes.
Now, but the examples you showed here are non-spherical. So if you now went to non-spherical objects, would this be a problem for you? I mean, the whole implementation, does it rely on these spherical symmetry?
No. You can easily consider more complex geometries.
Okay. So if I take an arbitrary geometry, would I get the right mobility matrix from your method?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We did exactly that. We can consider different geometries, stacked arrays, V-shaped particles, for which you have experimental results, and also you can solve the Stokes equation exactly, and the results are doing very well.
So if I look at passive diffusion, the mobility scales typically with the size and the aspect ratio and things like this, like the Stokes law and so on. Mm-hmm. So in your active diffusion, do I get the same type of scaling, this particle size, for example? And the diffusion constant should be inverse to the radius, the rotational one are inverse to radius or something like this. So do I get this here?
I have a question. So how many particles, passive and active particles together, can you simulate the method?
If you look at the diffusion, so you need relatively long simulations, you have the order of 100.
100 in a three-dimensional geometry.
Yeah.
And what was the maximum volume fraction you achieved?
20%.
20?
20. Okay, thanks again.